Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Looking ahead to Tuesday's election, we have everything you need to know about the ballot referendum questions and what's at stake. Plus, could voters this fall have an option to vote for a third-party candidate? And recall organizers targeting Assembly Speaker Robin Voss are launching a new effort against him. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for March 29th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we have a very heavy election show because, of course, there's an election on Tuesday. We're going to start out previewing just some of the statewide ballot referendums that voters will see. And if you voted early, you probably already saw these two questions. Now, these were passed by GOP lawmakers over the past two consecutive sessions to get these proposals on the ballot. So let's break down the first one. The first question asked voters whether private funds should be used to help conduct an election. This comes from what's called, quote-unquote, Zuckerbucks, when an organization that was money that was donated by Mark Zuckerberg, who's the CEO of Facebook, distributed over $10 million to over 200 communities here in Wisconsin during the pandemic to help clerks administer the election. Republicans had a problem with that. They thought it had influenced the election in some way. The second ballot question asked voters whether only election officials can perform certain duties on election day. It would essentially restrict who can work on elections. Now, this one is somewhat problematic from the State Democracy Research Institute that I talked to this week, because there's already a state law that clarifies who can work on election day and who has certain duties on, you know, say, Tuesday. So this kind of raises some questions that if passed, there might have to be some clarity through the courts to figure out who this applies to. Let's first take a listen to, I just hinted to, the State Democracy Institute, who I talked to earlier this week about this issue.
So I think that there are a few issues related to the language of the second proposed amendment. And so the first issue is that it's relatively vague. And so there is some question as to what exactly this would prohibit. And so who would this apply to? Does this apply to clerk staff? Does this apply to vendors who might service voting machines on voting days? Does this apply to other municipal employees who might help set up elections? And so another issue related to that is that there's actually a current statute that already prohibits individuals who are not election officials from conducting elections.
I've heard some from some voters who were like, I have no idea what these questions were about. I didn't know they were going to be on the ballot when I went to the polls. But, you know, there's also people who have, in a sense, kind of lobbied a little bit harder for these questions. And we heard a lot from Republican lawmakers on these issues during session.
So I want to go back to Republicans tried to eliminate the state treasurer's office a few years, two sessions back, saying it was basically unneeded. And they put this amendment on the ballot and they thought it's going to pass because, duh, people don't care about this office. And it didn't. And it got their attention, like, how did we miss this one? Well, there was an effort against the elimination of the treasurer's office, spearheaded by Sarah Godlewski, and it was defeated. Why I'm bringing that up is we're seeing now more of a concerted effort to not just say, okay, we assume voters will approve this because on the ballot, but Republicans actually like lobbying people via social media to go out and please vote yes on this. Conservative group running actually paid media on it. But I'm also now seeing the Democratic Party of Wisconsin endorse the no option on both questions. I'm seeing groups that tend to turn people out for spring elections also urging them to vote no. So we'll see how much it captivates the public's imagination. One thing is, if the public isn't clear about what it does, we've seen before they maybe are hesitant to vote yes on it because they don't understand it. So it's one thing to watch. I don't know it's going to have a huge impact going forward. We're not having a pandemic type election anymore. But the argument has been from local officials, like, look, lawmakers are not adequately funding, you know, election costs. We have these things we have to do. How are we supposed to pay for it if we don't get these options for private funds? But Republicans were incensed over the, they call them Zuckerbucks, because while it was $10 million over 200 communities, about $8.8 million went to the five biggest cities, all helped them vote fairly Democratic. Now, there's a debate of actually influence the outcome of the results, but they feel like it's unfair that those communities got that kind of money when others didn't.
All right. Let's also talk about more on the statewide scope, keeping on this, about all referendums that are on the ballot. Because in total, let's moving on to school districts, schools are asking voters to sign off on $1.4 billion worth to help pay for things like new buildings, renovations, maintenance, and other operational costs. Now, this marks the third highest amount districts have requested in a single election since 2020. That's according to data from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Now, this is a trend that, you know, is almost essentially booming across the state, not, you know, since 2020 in particular. But it's almost no surprise, if you are a voter, you're going to see somewhat of a referendum about your school district. And the complaint is that, well, they don't have enough resources to do a lot of things. We're going to get to the whole Milwaukee issue, too, because they have probably the most expensive referendum on the ballot across the state. But this is just one of the things that we're probably not going to see go away anytime soon.
So one thing that's been happening is Republicans under then-Governor Scott Walker, and then even with the budgets they crafted under Governor Evers, have chased a lower property tax bill. Basically call it buying down the levy. They put more state money into the formula, because remember, it's a formula of state aid plus property taxes up to a cap, a limit of what you can spend per student. As you put more state money in, you can raise less in property taxes. They realize it's like quicksand, essentially, because voters keep raising how much they can, the cap on they can spend on kids or the property taxes, they're driving them up, and so you're kind of always chasing this lower bill with more state money. We've seen a little bit of a pullback in the success of some of these referendums. A lot of them have gone down, especially a lot, but more than before. There's a trend for a while in the kind of the Walker years, where they were all, not all, but a lot of them were going through. It's dipped a little bit. So my question is, what's the appetite going forward for this? Because we have inflation going on, right? That's an issue. And we saw big investments in education this last budget. Has that satisfied the appetite for these property tax increases for voters?
Right, and a lot of schools got a lot of COVID funds, too, over the last several years that they could use on a wide variety of things beyond just pandemic needs. So that's kind of one of the arguments going into this next topic that I want to bring up is the Milwaukee Public Schools referendum, because they are asking voters to increase property taxes. And the big whopping number is $252 million. So property owners would have to pay an additional about $2.16 per $1,000 of their property value. Now, that's according to MPS's projections. So to put that in perspective, if you own a home that's worth, you know, $10,000, your property taxes are going to increase about $216. For a $200,000 home, you're looking at more than double than that, about $432. Now, MPS leaders have said that the district is facing a $200 million shortfall because state funding has not kept up with inflation. Opponents already argue, though, that there was already a ballot referendum back in 2020 asking voters for $87 million, and there was an argument that, hey, you guys just received over $700 million for COVID funds. So this is actually an issue in Milwaukee that is really tearing people apart. It's also a lot of MPS school board members. They're not on the same page. Of course, most of them voted for this to get on the ballot. You also have people like, I asked Governor Tony Evers about it. He's a former public school teacher. He also acknowledged that, yeah, I mean, times are tough right now. Of course, like you mentioned, with inflation, you know, prices at the grocery store, everyone's kind of feeling a squeeze right now. But in the end, he believes it's a right move, which he kind of got a little bit of criticism for making those comments as well.
So we're also seeing a more organized effort by the business community of Milwaukee to push back. The Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce is out there doing stuff. We're seeing an organized effort on paid media pushing back. So, and their argument is that if you pass this referendum, it'll be more of a burden on people in especially low-income neighborhoods who own homes. You're going to force people out of the city and cause a problem. So it's going to be another interesting one where you're seeing more of a organized effort against these referendums, especially through paid media.
All right, and staying on what's going to be on your ballot, if you vote Democratic, you are going to see an option, instead of just Joe Biden and Dean Phillips, what's called uninstructed. And what that is that it's in protest of President Joe Biden's handling of the war in Gaza. Now, the campaign has spread to several states, and it's now raising questions about whether a small but significant number of Democrats could possibly abandon Biden come November in key battleground states like here in Wisconsin. So I talked specifically about that issue with Barry Burton. He's a political science professor at UW-Madison. And he essentially said, yes, I mean, it's concerning for the Biden campaign, but whether it will actually impact come this fall, I think also a heavily relier is whether this issue with the war in Gaza is resolved. If Biden can connect with these voters once again, that's going to be the challenge ahead. So let's first just take it, listen to Professor Burton about this issue.
It's a concern for the Biden campaign. You know, the Biden campaign has a number of things working against it this year, and this presents yet another one to have part of the base of the party discontent over one issue about the handling of things in Gaza that might come back to bite them in the general election. Living in a swing state like ours, where everything matters, even a small group of disgruntled Democrats who carry over to the general election and are resistant to voting again for Biden, is something he's going to have to pay attention to. They're going to have to be wooed back, along with putting together other groups, probably to get just over the top in a state like ours.
It was also this week that we saw 20 state and local leaders endorsing this movement. There was also some state representative like Ryan Clancy, who's also a Milwaukee County Super Board member, Representative Francisca Kong, and just some other local leaders that are getting behind this effort.
So there's always a president for uninstructed on the Democratic primary ballot, even when like Barack Obama was popular with the party and was on his way to re-election in 2012, there were still several thousand, 5,000, something like that, votes for uninstructed. So there is going to be a presence for this movement on the ballot on Tuesday. My question is, one, what's turnout look like on Tuesday? The races for the party's nominations are basically settled. Trump has enough delegates for the Republican nomination, Biden for the Democratic nomination. There's not been a heavy advertising campaign for either part, other presidential candidates for the Tuesday. But will there be a heavy turnout? Will also, on the Republican side, will there be a big vote for Nikki Haley or Ron DeSantis, even though Trump has a nomination? This is a gauge of how split the parties are. So for Republicans, the Haley-DeSantis vote versus Trump. For Democrats, unstructured versus Biden. Is there a split in the base? Then two, in talking to Democrats, they feel like, yes, this is not a great look. Some states has been like 20% of the vote. But whatever happens in April is not necessarily going to happen in November, because in November, as we've seen through the Marquette Law School polls over the years, the third-party option, especially when there are two incumbents or two candidates who aren't very popular, is always big in the spring, gets small in the summer, a little smaller in early fall. By Election Day, it's rarely much of anything in the vote, because people start going, okay, I've got a choice. It's A or B. And C, if I vote for it, isn't really going to help determine things. So will there be a real pushback or problem for Biden come November? Maybe. Maybe. You know, RFK Jr., he's pushing on the ballot in various states. Jill Stein, the Green Party. Cornel West is running, or says he is. Haven't seen any president from Wisconsin yet. So there are possible problems. But once people get locked in come late October, they're really going to go, I've got Trump and Biden, but I'm going to go over here. I don't know. That's
right.
The good question.
I think I'm really just interested in the raw number, too, because activists of this movement are hoping to get about 20,000 people to vote uninstructed. And there's no coincidence with that number, because that is actually the threshold that Biden beat Trump here in Wisconsin by back in 2020. Also just interested of, if they get closer to that number, comparing that to other battleground states like Michigan, where it was well over 100,000. You know, Minnesota had a successful kind of push, too. They actually received two delegates. Of course, that might not matter much come November, but that's just definitely something to watch for. I've also seen a lot of people get a lot of text messages about this, too. You know, once you get a hold of the voter rolls, that's how campaigns can target you and send text messages, like reminding you to vote. If you haven't voted, they'll remind you. But I've seen quite a lot of people ask me about why they're getting this. So we'll see how big the lobbying effort actually is.
My impression is 20,000 is they're trying to lowball the number a little bit. They expect to get higher than that, but that's kind of setting a tone of, you know, trying to tell Biden, like, you won by this many, we're that many. But again, will those folks, one, were they going to vote in November for somebody other than Biden anyway, or Trump? And two, will they still stick to that position come late October, November, when it's really down to Trump v. Biden?
Right, and we were just talking about third-party candidates, and it leads in right to our next topic, which is about No Labels. You might be familiar with that, because it is a third-party organization seeking to give voters an alternative rather than just Biden and Trump. They say, this group, that they've collected enough signatures to get on Wisconsin's ballot. On Thursday, officials submitted a petition to the Wisconsin Elections Commission indicating that if they have secured more than 26,000 signatures, which is actually double than what you need. So this will be interesting. Of course, we're talking a lot about Tuesday's election. This is definitely could possibly a factor come November.
And the path they took is actually the harder path in the ballot. So let's talk big picture for presidential candidates. If you are a major party like the Democrats, Republicans, you always cross a threshold to be on the presidential primary ballot or the fall ballot. The Green Party qualified because of how it performed in 2022, as did, I think, the Libertarian Party. For no labels, there are two options. One, you could just run as an independent, collect 2,000 to 4,000 signatures between, I think, July and August, and turn them in. That's the Green Party tried 4 years ago. Problems with their nomination papers. They got prevented from getting the ballot. This option is at least 10,000 signatures, with at least 1,000 from each of three congressional districts. But it gives you the opportunity to not just have your presidential and vice presidential candidates on the ballot, but also other offices, and you can have these other offices on the August primary ballot. Now, it also has an option here, or deadline, I think it's early September, you have to notify the Elections Commission of your candidate for president and vice president. That could be a problem for no labels, because, or challenge at least, because they have asked almost everybody, not me, at this point, but they've asked a lot of people.
Either, yeah.
They've asked a lot of people, do you want to do this? And people have said no. Now, you never know how serious the overture was. But that said, Chris Christie has said, I'm not going to do this. Other people have said they're not going to do it. Nikki Haley. So who are they going to find to run as this presidential candidate, especially when you're seeing Democrats really push back hard? This is basically a spoiler effort to help Donald Trump. And two, now that they've turned these in, there is a period to look at them and try and challenge them. So Democrats will give them a look. You know, they're not going to throw with this. I think they have 10 days, like April 8th is the deadline to do it. What's really fascinating is this looks like a very professional, paid operation to collect signatures. And they did it without a peep. Like, the window opened January 1st to begin this process. And I asked No Labels several times, are you going this route? They wouldn't tell me anything. There are a lot of Democrats in Wisconsin who have a lot of communities around the state. They somehow collected all these signatures without any Democrat like saying, oh, wait a second, this is something I should tell the local party about, mm-hmm. and like passing word up the chain to the state party. So the state party's kind of caught off guard, it seems like, if they did this. So, I mean, in a way, kudos to them. They found a way to kind of like discreetly do this, get 27,000 signatures across the state. So, but now let's find out if they're all valid.
Right, definitely. And what also was interesting, too, one of the biggest advocates of No Labels this week, Joe Lieberman, passed away. So some of the, you know, one of the biggest critics of the two parties and wants to get this agenda across, unfortunately, passed away this week. Also, just speaking about Tuesday, too, I know we were just talking about No Labels looking ahead to November. The former president is going to be in Green Bay, and there's no coincidence because it's going to be happening, of course, on Election Day. And interesting that he's doing it in the Green Bay market, of course, Of course, it trends a little bit sometimes, a little bit red. Of course, in past elections, it turned a little bit more purple. But what I'm watching for is whether U.S. Senate candidate Eric Hovde, has he been invited? He's going to be on stage. I think those are some of the things they're going to be watching for on Tuesday.
We've all asked Hovde, are you going to show up? And the challenge for Eric Hovde is, we talked before, if he embraces Trump, bear hugs him, does that help him in the suburbs of Milwaukee? If he embraces Trump, it probably helps him in western Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin. Like, that's where Trump does well. And we've talked before, if Biden and Trump have caps, let's just use their polling numbers. Let's say it's 48-46 come November. Pick your winner either way. Where do those people beyond those 94% who vote for those two people go? Is it going to be something that Tammy Baldwin can grab those folks because she's better known? Can Hovde run it beyond Donald Trump? I mean, if Trump, let's say Trump's a 48 guy, right? Can Eric Hovde run at 50% against him? Well, there's not going to be a Green Party count. I don't think there is. Other third-party options that I know of in those races. How does he get to 50% above Donald Trump at 48? That's a challenge. Now, Ron Johnson did it in 2016. But Ron Johnson was an incumbent at the time, and he had this kind of dual effect where it was low turnout that election compared to normal presidential years. Trump drove new voters in western Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, who came out for him, and Johnson still had this kind of, he hadn't got too Trumpy yet in people's minds, so suburban Milwaukee still turned out pretty heavy for him. Mm-hmm. Johnson didn't fare as well in suburban Milwaukee in 2022, and that's why he won by 1 point. What I'm getting at is that Johnson proved you can do it. You can run above Trump in Wisconsin as a Republican. Can Eric Hovde replicate that? That's the big question, that Senate race, if it's a dead even presidential race, and they're, again, in that mid-upper 40s for the two candidates for president.
All right, moving on to Congress, because there might be a familiar face who might be seeking the 1st Congressional District, which is Representative Brian Stiles' seat. Former Democratic Congressman and State Assembly Leader Peter Barca is, quote, strongly considering a campaign to challenge Stiles. Now, that was first reported by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And on Thursday, Barca announced that he will leave his role as Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. So once he kind of resigned from position, and there's some rumors that you might want to go back into Congress, well, that doesn't, it's pretty telling.
So at first, we had a luncheon out in D.C. with Stile last week, or breakfast, I should say, and kind of started picking up that there was a new Democrat possibly looking at running against Stile. Right now, there are two not well known. One had raised, had $2,600 in the bank at the end of 2023. One had not reported any fundraising yet to the FEC. And this new Democrat card at me calls about it, and I got a text back from one of my sources. And it had Barca question mark earlier this week. Like, this person had heard Barca, but wasn't sure, like, it was really serious, because why would Peter Barca want to run for Congress again? It's been a long time.
Yeah.
So the second we got the announcement from the Evers administration, he was leaving, effective April 9th, I knew, okay, this is what's going on. Sources confirmed he's looking at it. I think he's looking at it pretty hard. I think he's likely going to run, or at least announce a campaign for Congress. The question is why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the attraction? Well, one, so Barca was in the assembly for 8 years before he won a special election in 1983 for that seat in southeastern Wisconsin. He lost in the red wave of 1994, swept out of office, went to the Clinton administration, came back to the assembly, won a seat again, became minority leader, all that stuff, and now he went to the Evers administration in 2019. People think he's got that itch still. Like, you know, that's, that was there. He was there in Congress for like 18 months, whatever it was, and wants to go back. Two, you know, Brian Stiles got $3.6 million in the bank. He won by 9 points in 2022. This is not a pure swing seat. If you look at the top of the ticket from 2022, Ron Johnson won statewide by 1 point. He won the first versus Mandela Barnes, like in total votes, to, by 4.7 points, something like 4.3 points. Governor Evers won statewide by 3.4 points, lost the first to Michaels by like less than 500 votes. So that tells you that top of the ticket, Barca likely needs Biden to outrun Trump by a little bit to have a shot, unless Barca can outrun Biden, which is possible. On the one hand, you have Joe Biden, early 80s, Peter Barca, upper 60s, not really fresh faces, if you're looking for somebody to invigorate the Democratic base. On the other, Barca is well known. Mm-hmm. He's from Kenosha. I mean, this guy, his reputation for being involved in everything. He's an energizer bunny. He used to carry around this giant cup of Diet Dr.
I think he still does.
Yes. Right?
A big gulp, let's clarify.
Yes. So there's that going for him. Style, you know, hasn't had a really tough race yet since he won in 2018. Can Peter Barca give it to him? That's a big question. And then two, where's the national money go? So if you think about like the map to flip the House right now, the obvious place to go are places where Republicans have seats Joe Biden won in 2020, or after redrawn in 22 were Biden seats. Okay. That's first place. But you want to expand the map. These are the first and the third in Wisconsin places you can expand the map. The issue is they're kind of Republican-leaning seats. Now, they're not dark red. The third's probably more Republican than the first. But it's not a obvious pickup seat. So will the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, invest in Wisconsin heavily this fall because they need that? Go back to 2022. The DCCC abandoned Brad Paff in 3rd District.
That's right.
They had laid down campaign buys in late October, started pulling them back, and then just went kaput. Derek Van Orden won by a couple points, and people kept saying if they'd only spent money, it would have worked. Now, here's the thing. If the DCCC has ad buys for late October and the 1st and the 3rd, they're not serious about those seats. You got to spend money early to get people's attention. So I'm watching, are they spending in Wisconsin in late September and early October? If it's the last 2 weeks, they're not serious about those seats, or there's placeholders. So there's that big question. And then, too, what's the environment going to be like? You know, how's Biden going to do? And can, again, can Peter Barker run ahead of of Joe Biden in that district? That's going to be a huge question.
Right. And staying on the topic of Congress, we're going to be kind of hinting towards last week's news after we taped the show. Congressman Mike Gallagher is resigning early. He made an announcement after he said that he was already going to not run for reelection. And now we're hearing that U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson has spoken and apparently encouraged Gallagher to not resign from Congress early as planned. Now, that was according from a report from Scripps News. So this just raises the question. I mean, it appears that, you know, Mike has one foot out the door already. You know, he already announced. But this just kind of telling of how Speaker Johnson is a little bit worried about his party going forward, as they've really grappled with a lot of issues. You know, of course, that even before Johnson, there was a big pitch to remove the former speaker. So it's kind of a little bit more turmoil for him.
And look, this is a giant stick in the eye from Mike Gallagher to the Republican leadership, and tells you how much he does not like being in the House right now. So first off, remember, Gallagher got all kinds of grief because he voted against the impeachment of the Homeland Security Secretary. After that happened, I had all kinds of Republicans tell me, hey, you know, Mike's not worried about a primary. He can survive that. He announced like days later he's not going to seek reelection, a sign of like he wasn't really enjoying the place anymore. This is a narrow majority. Him leaving leaves him with basically a one-seat majority. They can lose one member on any vote after he leaves April 19th and pass something. That's not easy to do in that House right now. It's also interesting the way he timed his resignation. In Wisconsin, if you leave between the second Tuesday in April and the second Tuesday in May, there's no special election until November. If he resigns before the second Tuesday in April, there would be a special election that would fill the seat right away. He's not doing that. Mm-hmm. People think there's a reason why, which is he's telling leadership, you guys are off the rails. I've had enough. I'm not doing this anymore. Now, we've also seen Marjorie Taylor Greene calling for him to be expelled from Congress. That's not going to happen. But it tells you like there is this angst among the kind of MAGA base or MAGA movement of like this guy is threatening our hold on things, because he is. I mean, it also underscores Republicans are having a challenge governing right now in Washington, D.C., in the House. They're having trouble getting things done. They're relying on Democrats for basic procedural things. It's not a great situation, and there's a very tenuous hold that Johnson has in that speakership right now, because MTG has also filed a motion to vacate the chair.
I was just going
to
bring that up, right?
Taz hasn't said he's going to vote on it yet, but just says, hey, it's just out there, just in case you know.
And while they're in recess, this is just going to be lingering. You know, the pot is just going to continue to stir on this issue. Also, just want to quickly, briefly mention of those who are considering to run for Gallagher's seat. We've talked about this before. State Senator Andre Jacques, former State Senator and Senate President Roger Roth, and there's still a big question mark under the young gun, I want to call him, Alex Brusewitz, who has been attending some, you know, Lincoln dinners, some conservative fundraising efforts. He has not make an announcement, but we're keeping an eye on him.
Brusewitz is very much riding that whole like Trump thing. He's a MAGA activist trying to carry that into a platform to run for Congress.
And now we're going to end the show this week talking about, which was our first topic last week, which is about the recall to oust Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Well, we're talking about it now is because organizers of the whole effort essentially want a do-over. And they have launched that they want to have another recall effort, which means they're going to go back out into that district and try to collect more signatures after they appear to fall short the first time. So this new effort comes as there's still a pending decision before the State Elections Commission. And Voss has also challenged that effort and arguing that, hey, you didn't have enough signatures. It's now time to end this whole thing. And Voss didn't appear too happy with this, that they're igniting this effort again.
So it's a multi-leveled onion once again. Mm-hmm. So first off, the Elections Commission asked the Supreme Court, which map do we use? We don't know. There's that request. Governor Evers last week said, hey, don't dismiss this thing. Let us, the parties who are in the redistricting lawsuit, try and reach an agreement on which map to use. While they were talking about that, on Tuesday, the recall of Voss bill went to the Dane County Court and said, hey, we're supposed to file a response to Voss's rebuttal or challenge of a recall petition. Give us more time because we don't know what map is in place. Then they went and launched the second one, which is basically running concurrently to the first one. Then Governor Evers late yesterday filed a letter with the Supreme Court saying, look, I agree with the Senate Democrats and the Democratic voters who challenged the maps in the first place. The new maps I signed last month should be in place for recall and special elections going forward. However, not everybody agrees that's the way we should go. Republicans had filed something earlier saying, look, this should be dismissed. the Elections Commission itself, the commissioners, could exercise their authority and say which maps to use.
They should figure out, yeah.
So there's your steps. And oh, by the way, there's a hearing this morning in court about that request from the recall petitioners to delay things or get a stay. So it also opens another 30-day window for Robin Voss to raise unlimited amounts of money from donors, which I'm sure he'll take advantage of through the middle of May.
It kind of just goes to show this can of worms that opened up just when we thought we got new maps, everything's good. Well, no, there's a few more things to button up on this issue with the maps. All right, well, that will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.